What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the show. I hope you're all having a good day. And hey, we may have some new faces in the audience today. If so, welcome. I am Ben with the BTC Sessions. We're going to be talking about what's going on lately in Bitcoin. And there's been some, we'll call it controversial stuff going on that I'm a little bit involved in. And so we're going to chat a little bit about the Convoy, GoFundMe, and where Bitcoin plays into that. We're also going to chat a little bit about some other stuff. We're going to talk about Fidelity. We're going to talk about some tax-related stuff on the horizon in the U.S. in and around Bitcoin, some interesting stuff going on there. So all kinds of stuff. We're even going to talk a little bit about the Texas energy grid and Bitcoin and what's happening there. As always, of course, this is live. Anything can happen. So I defer to my good friend Bill here.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
Now, if you haven't already, please do like, subscribe, share, especially if you're new here. Welcome. Those things really do help the show. And I am Ben with the BTC Sessions. This is your daily session.
Huddle the Bitcoin.
Now, before we dive into everything, let's take a look at where we are in the market right now. Chrome has lost. Oh, wonderful. Chrome has lost permission to share your screen. Oh, wonderful. Give me a second here, guys, as I go ahead and change my settings here. Anyways, we are just in the middle of, oh, man. Of course, this happens right in the middle of a live stream. That's super fun. We're doing this live. Great. System preferences, privacy, screen recording. Oh, man. Fun updates in the middle of a show. In the middle of a show. This is great. There it is. Screen recording. Come on. Everybody's watching like, what? What in the hell is going on? Of course, screen recording. There we go. Let's go ahead and fix that. Okay, of course. Jeez. All right. Well, I think we're good here. Let's give this a second try here, and you'll have to excuse me if it's being a pain in the butt. Of course, this would happen. Wow. Amazing. Okay, well, I guess I'm just going to start walking through everything as best I can, and we will see what's up with this. And geez, guys, that sucks. I apologize. Okay, well, we're gonna do it. We're gonna do it with just me. You get to look at me today. That's great. That's okay. This will be audio as well. So I'll walk you through what's going on. Anyways, we're sitting at $36,921 per coin. A single US dollar will pick you up 2,708 sats. 90.23% of all Bitcoin have been mined. In terms of fees, we're looking at 6 sats per byte for the next block, but anything beyond that, 1 sat per byte will do ya. Shout out to sponsors of the show, ShakePay.com. If you're buying Bitcoin in Canada, super easy way to do so. No deposit fees, no withdrawal fees, super easy with e-transfers. And there's a link down below if you're just diving in. After your first $100 Bitcoin purchase, they'll give you $30 for free. They also have their Shake for Sats, their Sats back Visa card, all that fun stuff. So check them out. Also, ledn.io, L-E-D-N.io. Bitcoin.io. You can use Bitcoin for a variety of different things, including if you're in a pinch and you need dollars, but you don't want to sell your Bitcoin. Well, you can, of course, deposit Bitcoin there, get a loan of dollars to your bank account within 24 hours. And when you pay back those dollars, you get back the same amount of Bitcoin, which is the important number. Links for that are down below. I do live on Bitcoin, BitRefill, BitRefill.com helps a ton with this. You can use Bitcoin to buy any gift card your little heart desires. It's available in a ton of different countries, and you also earn Bitcoin back as you shop. On top of that, they do have a referral program, so you can earn additional sats, and you can pay, of course, via Bitcoin on-chain or via the Lightning Network if you're diving into that. So check them out. Up next, the Keystone Wallet. Since you can't see it, some improvising. Fun. Since you can't see it on screen, the Keystone Wallet, one of my favorite and most used Bitcoin hardware wallets. These things help secure your coins. This one is 100% air gapped, meaning you don't plug it into anything internet connected. It's all offline via QR code. That keeps the keys to your money safe and away from internet connections. You can check them out in the show notes down below. And finally, if you're backing up any important Bitcoin wallet, you have your 12 to 24 word seed phrase that you typically write down on paper. Maybe not the best way to do it, given that many things can go wrong with that. Fire damage, water damage. I've heard horror stories of people discarding the thing because they just weren't paying attention, and it's a piece of paper. So if you want some extra peace of mind, I always back up my stuff on the Bilfoddle over at privacypros.io. It is solid steel, and it makes all those worries disappear. So check them out. With that, let's get chatting about what's going on. And again, I really wish that I had my my visual accompaniment here. But, you know, that's just how things go. So we're just going to power through. Anyways, many of you will be familiar with the convoy happening in Ottawa right now that went across Canada. And the main message of the convoy is that they would like the mandates removed, all restrictions, any lockdown related stuff, restrictions on businesses, individuals. Because they feel it's time to remove those. They're no longer effective, and a lot of Canadians want to return to normal. Now, some of that has, of course, been tainted by some individuals that are less than respectful and doing crappy things, and that always sucks. It always sucks when somebody in a large group of people that are that just want to voice their opinion decides to go in and do some distasteful things. And that's always awful. But I do feel that it can be focused on a lot more in comparison to the number of people that are present and that are supporting this. I think that it can get polarized, and people tend to focus on messages from whatever side of the coin that they are looking at and ignoring the rest. And I do know people that are there. And when I see the things that tend to be brought up the most, that get the most clicks, they are not representative of the people, at least that I know on the ground there, and the people, what they are telling me that they're seeing as well. And so I think that's unfortunate. Now, in the news recently, we've seen that they had a GoFundMe page, which raised quite a lot of money, like $10+ million. Some of that was released, but the rest of it is currently frozen or temporarily paused. You can't contribute via the GoFundMe, and they cannot access the rest of that cash for now. It appears, as they're checking that everything is still in line with the terms and conditions of GoFundMe, because obviously there's been, again, a lot of, it's in the forefront of the news. And so there's a lot of pressure there, I am sure. And so that is where I had some people reach out to me. Greg Foss was one of them, in concert with there's a gentleman there, and his Twitter handle is Nobody Caribou, the animal caribou. He's on the ground in Ottawa and sharing a lot of stuff on Twitter of what he's seeing, and you know, people singing and dancing and all, you know, feeding the homeless and giving away food and doing all kinds of things that I feel aren't focused on as much. Maybe I'm you know, this is, again, my personal feeling here. I feel it's not focused on as much as it could be. I'd love to see more focus of that from various media organizations, but I do recognize that somebody riling up somebody that's trying to cause a provocative scene obviously is going to get a lot more attention. And, you know, quite frankly, I don't want those people around. And a lot of the protesters that are there don't want those people around. I've seen videos of people confronting individuals with less than tactful flags that are just kind of there to get a, you know, whatever message they're trying to send, I don't feel is representative of most people there. So I'll just finish it at that. Anyways, I had people reach out to me regarding how they might accept Bitcoin and Lightning Network donations. And if I might be able to show how that's possible. And so, yeah, I said, sure. Let's figure something out. And so then a Twitter handle was created that I do have access to. It is called Honk Honk Hodl. Yes, Honk Honk Hodl. That was only created a couple days ago. It's over 1,000 followers now. And in combination with that Twitter handle, there was something, there's a website called Tallycoin. And it's Tally, T-A-L-L-Y-C-O dot I-N. And so there's a link. Basically, what Tallycoin is a way to set up a GoFundMe-esque, like a fundraiser for whatever you're doing, and accept Bitcoin both on-chain and via the Lightning Network. And the really cool thing here is that what I was able to do is create a Tallycoin account via the Honk Honk Hodl Twitter handle, which you can go to right now if you want to follow them. There's a pinned tweet to everything that I'm talking about there. And so what you can do with Tallycoin is, as I said, set up a fundraiser. But the cool thing about it is when it comes to something like GoFundMe, you are necessarily trusting your funds in the hands of GoFundMe. And I'm talking from the perspective of any organizer that is creating something. So they are trusting that GoFundMe will allow them access to their funds and that there's not going to be something in the terms and conditions that they may be able to stop payment and all that kind of stuff, which is what we're seeing right now. We see funds that are held up and not available, at least at the moment of doing this video. When it comes to Tallycoin, that is not the case, because everything that is sent there is never in the custody of Tallycoin itself. It is linked directly to a Bitcoin wallet that the organizer controls. And so what has happened here is that this Tallycoin page that is linked in the Honk Honk Hodl Twitter handle is set up, and it has a dedicated Bitcoin address for on-chain donations. And is also linked to my Bitcoin node, which you can see right here over my shoulder if you're watching. That is my Get Umbral, or my Umbral node. And the Umbral node is set up with a Lightning Network node, and all kinds of funds are allocated via various Lightning channels of liquidity to facilitate transactions through them. And that is what the Lightning Network is. It allows people to send instant and nearly free transactions around not having to use the base layer of Bitcoin. So the myth that Bitcoin is slow and inexpensive has dissolved with the advent of the Lightning Network. And so I was able to link the Tallycoin page directly to my Lightning node. And so we set this up and shared it out, and we had an initial goal of a modest goal of 10 million sats. And so there's 100 million sats in a Bitcoin. So 1/10 of a Bitcoin right now is somewhere in and around the range of $3,700. Well, we very quickly surpassed that. We surpassed that the same day. So by I guess the morning of the following day, but that's less than 24 hours. We went over 10 million sats and started to pick up some steam. We got some more interest. We got some monster 10 million sat donations from a couple people. A lot of stuff started happening. It is now sitting at 71. Let me just refresh here and make sure, but 71,692,657 sats. So getting pretty close to 75% or three quarters of a whole Bitcoin, which is super awesome. And again, you can see there's a stream of individuals. Some people, you know, throwing over like a dollar, some people sending, you know, 100 sats or 10 sats or 50 sats, and then others sending larger, you know, million sat transactions, whatever they decide to do. And it's really cool to see, because what I'm looking, and this is where I really wish I had the visuals, is I'm looking at the dashboard for my Lightning node right now. And I can see a live stream of individual transactions from people with nice messages coming in, saying that they support the Canadians that are doing this. And some of it's coming from Canada, and I've seen it come from all over the world, from South America, from South Africa, from Ireland, from places in England, from Germany, from Brazil, from a bunch from the US, just literally all over the globe. I've seen from Russia, cue the conspiracy theories there. I've seen it from everywhere. I see one from Colorado right now, from California. Lots of nice messages coming through. Congrats to the Canadian Bitcoin community. Honk, honk. Just feel happy when sending sats. Congrats to Canadian Bitcoiners and truckers. A lot of really great things coming through there. So again, I'd like to extend a thank you to those. And the way that this is set up to work is yes, currently the on-chain stuff goes to a dedicated address, and the Lightning stuff is being funneled through my node. But at regular intervals, we will be dumping that into a multi-sig. And the multi-sig will be between myself, Greg Foss, Jeff Booth, likely our man on the ground, Nobody Caribou, and we'll probably have a fifth mystery key holder somewhere else, perhaps in another country, just as a fail safe, and have it as a 3 of 5 multi-sig. And then I'm leaving fiduciary duties to kind of, I would say, you know, I just am kind of on the tech side of things, just facilitating, hey, this is how it works. And then a fiduciary will go to Greg, Jeff, and probably our individual on the ground in Ottawa, because he's most likely to understand what is actually needed, what would be helpful. So yeah, that is what's happening right now. And I want to say that initially I wasn't planning on associating my name with anything. I found it a bit worrisome, mostly because I do have a lot of liberal leaning friends, and that's awesome. I love them all. But I do worry that there are some that I worry that this is going to get some traction, and that it will be seen, and that I will legitimately lose some friends. That's an upsetting thing. And I hope that doesn't happen. You know, again, I don't feel that the majority of people that are in Ottawa right now are bad people. And to be honest, I agree that I think it's time to go back to normal. And I just thought I'd throw my hat in the ring here and help with that. And I'll leave it at that. But, you know, if you don't support this, that is totally fine. If you do support this, then thank you. And feel free to go follow that handle at Hong Kong Hodl. And again, there's a pinned tweet there if you see fit. But again, for those that have issues with everything that's going on, that's totally fine too. I respect your opinion. And but I also don't think that a large swath of Canadians should be entirely written off because of certain individuals that, you know, fall into the crowd, are ostracized by the crowd, I might add, but fall into the crowd, and then are those instances are kind of amplified through the media. And I just feel aren't reflective of the individuals that I know. So anyways, yeah, sorry guys, I got a little sentimental there, but I'm gonna keep going here. Let's move on. So again, thank you guys. I'll leave that there. We're going to chat a little bit more about that. I'm going to be on a Spaces tomorrow morning, I believe, or maybe next week. But there's also going to be a little tutorial on Saturday. That is just like a 2-minute, hey, how do I do this if I don't know how to use Bitcoin? So anyways, I'll leave that there. Let's move on, guys. Fidelity, let's talk about them. They dropped a little piece this week, just a couple days ago on the 31st. And I'm looking at their tweet right now. It says, our latest piece argues that Bitcoin's first technological breakthrough wasn't as a superior payment technology, but as a superior form of money. As a monetary good, Bitcoin should be considered separately from other digital assets. I've got the full report up here right now. I've actually printed it off. It's called Bitcoin First, Why Investors Need to Consider Bitcoin Separately from Other Digital Assets. I'm just going to read one little excerpt that they have here. Basically what they say in this paper, we propose point one, Bitcoin is best understood as a monetary good. And one of the primary investment theses for Bitcoin is as a store of value asset in an increasingly digital world. Point two, Bitcoin is fundamentally different from any other asset. No other digital asset is likely to improve upon Bitcoin as a monetary good because Bitcoin is the most, quote, or in brackets, relative to other digital assets, secure, decentralized, sound digital money, and any improvement will necessarily face trade-offs. Point three, there is not necessarily mutual exclusivity between the success of Bitcoin, of the Bitcoin network and all other digital asset networks. Rather, the rest of the digital asset ecosystem can fulfill different needs or solve other problems that Bitcoin simply does not. Point four, other non-Bitcoin projects should be evaluated from a different perspective than Bitcoin. Point five, Bitcoin should be considered an entry point for traditional allocators looking to gain exposure to digital assets. And point six, investors should hold two distinctly separate frameworks for considering investment in this digital asset ecosystem. The first framework examines the inclusion of Bitcoin as an emerging monetary good, and the second considers the addition of other digital assets that exhibit venture capital-like properties. So they're basically saying Bitcoin is a new digital monetary network for the globe that is better money than we've ever seen, and that everything else is akin to a very early stage tech stock with an uncertain future. This is basically what they're saying. They go on to compare Bitcoin as monetary good to gold and fiat currency. And they have seven criteria. Is it durable, divisible, fungible, portable, verifiable, scarce, and does it have a track record? Bitcoin scores a big yes in all of those, except for the track record part, because it's of its age. It's only 13 years old. Gold scores yes to durable, fungible, scarce, and its track record of 5,000 plus years, but it does not score in the divisible, portable, and verifiable. You know, as an individual, especially if you're holding a gold ETF, you can't really verify that. A lot of times it's in a vault, and even verifying physical gold can be a bit of an undertaking if you see fit to do so. And finally, fiat currency, it only got two. It's divisible and portable. That's about it. Durable, nah. Fungible, nah. Verifiable, nah. Scarce, nah. Track record, definitely not. And this is coming from Fidelity, guys. That's wild. They have, this thing is 26 pages long. It's pretty awesome. It's a good read. It goes through a lot of different things in terms of mining. They talk about the virtuous cycle or reflexivity of Bitcoin, and they have kind of a circular higher demand and higher prices turns into more miners, turns into higher security, makes it more attractive, and then creates more users and holders. And this kind of goes in cycles. Of course, we do see ups and downs. It's volatile as hell. Miners that aren't efficient drop off the network when there is a drop in price. But all in all, it's a self-regulating entity, and it's worked beautifully for well over a decade now. Also, what was brought to light as Fidelity released this, they've been actually kind of tinkering and actually even mining Bitcoin since 2014. Not a lot of people knew that, but yeah, they did. And it was public information, but it was just dabbling initially. And then they gradually built their kind of thesis and understanding of it. And I got to say, to see this coming out of Fidelity and the type of understanding that they have here, tip of the hat to this one. Let's keep going. There's a bipartisan bill to eliminate taxes for small Bitcoin transactions in the U.S. So this from Bitcoin Magazine. A bipartisan bill introduced Thursday would exempt Bitcoin transactions from tax obligations if the associated capital gains are $200 or less. So that doesn't mean a $200 transaction. It means that the incurred gains from your transaction would be $200 or less. So let's say you had Bitcoin for years and years and it went up, you know, 10,000%. And then you go and you buy a coffee, you're still not going to incur a taxable gain if this were to be passed, because the gain on your $5 expenditure is not over $200 of gain. So I think that's a good first step. I did see a funny tweet from somebody saying, comparing El Salvador to the US. In El Salvador, they were like, hey, we're going to just say 0% taxes on basically anything associated with Bitcoin anywhere. And then the US is like, well, let's start at $200. The best I can do is $200. Yeah, but anyways, it's still an interesting development. We'll see how it goes. But it says, this is seeking to incentivize the digital currency's usage as a medium of exchange in the US economy. Currently, any gain obtained from the sale of cryptocurrency must be reported as taxable income, regardless of the size or purpose of the transaction. The quote here from Rep. Susan Delbene, co-author of the bill, she said, antiquated regulations around virtual currency do not take into account its potential for use in our daily lives, instead treating it more like a stock or ETF. However, virtual currency has evolved rapidly in the past few years, with more opportunities to use it in our daily lives. This common sense bill cuts the red tape and opens the door to further innovations, ultimately growing to our economy. So that's an interesting development. And there's one other interesting development in the tax realm. And this is from Coin Center, and it centers around an individual that filed a tax form in 2019. And he was using a proof of stake network, but he was basically staking, and he was getting rewards for staking, whatever it was. I don't know what he was staking, but the guy's name is Joshua Jarrett, and he sued the IRS for a refund. In 2019, he earned block rewards on a proof of stake network, or multiple networks, it appears, paid taxes as if those rewards were income, as per the limited guidance we have so far from the IRS, but also asked for a refund, arguing that the rewards should be treated as newly created property, like ears of corn growing in a field, and therefore shouldn't be taxed until he sells them. The IRS denied that refund, and so he sued, saying it was misrepresenting the law. The lawsuit is still ongoing. However, as announced today by Proof of Stake Alliance, the IRS may be trying to get out of it before they lose. They are now offering Josh his refund without admitting the merits of his argument. Rightly, Josh is not taking the refund because he wants clear guidance from the IRS, not a mere monetary victory. So he hasn't won yet, but it does look like the IRS is realizing that their current policy may not adequately be justified by the law and may not survive a judgment from the court. That is great news. Moreover, as we previously written, this should not be interpreted as merely a positive development for proof of stake validators, but good news for Bitcoin miners as well. And this is the part that I wanted to get to. Quote, any block reward from a permissionless cryptocurrency network, whether it's created through proof of work mining, proof of stake validating, or some other mechanism, is most accurately described as the creation of value through one's own capital and labor, rather than the receipt of value from an employer. The network allows users to create wealth from their own resources. It does not pay people for their labor. Why is this the more sensible characterization? Creators of block rewards literally do not get paid by anyone. Who is the employer when you're working for the Bitcoin network? Just as truly permissionless decentralized networks lack third-party promoters upon whom users rely in the context of securities law, they also lack discernible employers and employees in the context of income tax law. To be clear, that does not mean that block rewards can or should be tax-free, simply that they should be taxed like crops, minerals, livestock, artwork, and assembly line widgets. They should be taxed when they are sold, not when they are created. Very interesting. We'll see how that moves forward. But the fact that they were about to offer, you know, without saying anything, they were just going to give the refund. And kudos to Josh for being like, no, let's do the court thing. I think that's a very positive development for Bitcoin miners in the long run. Let's keep going. Bitcoin miners, speaking of them, are helping the Texas grid brace for a winter storm impact. As a major winter storm descends on Texas, by the way, this is CNBC, crypto miners are powering down operations to help ease the burden on the state's already beleaguered power grid. The chief concern is we might see a repeat of last February when a deep freeze devastated large swaths of the state, leaving 10 million Texans without electricity and resulted in multi-system meltdown that was within minutes of a much more serious and potentially complete blackout. So Riot Blockchain is one of the biggest publicly traded crypto mining companies in America. They began to shut down their power to its Rockdale mine on Tuesday, a process which occurs in phases. Quote, as the storm has progressed, we have continued to decrease our power consumption by 98 to 99%. So currently we are using only 1 to 2% of power. That's from Tristan Pafer, Riot's director of communications. Pafer told CNBC Riot will continue to manage its power usage as needed until there is no extreme stress on the grid. So it's interesting because there's a cool dynamic with Bitcoin miners and existing power grids. And that is currently grids typically have to run at 100% capacity. They have to run at all times as if maximum or peak demand is currently happening. The reason why they need to do so is because if peak demand comes and they're not doing that, then they would have roaming blackouts. And so you always have to have power being produced at a certain threshold just in case it is needed. And if you cannot offload all of that energy, it's very difficult to store and often just gets fully wasted. In fact, I believe the number is something like a third of all energy created is just waste. What Bitcoin miners can do is they can sweep in and become a buyer of last resort. So any energy that would have been wasted can be paid for by Bitcoin miners. And what this can do is it can actually help bolster and fund the electricity grids and build out more infrastructure. Some people are big fans of the idea of moving to renewable energy sources. However, the problem with that is it's very intermittent, and you would need to have a massive, massive amount of infrastructure in a lot of cases to keep that kind of peak demand there, or the ability to service peak demand. However, again, Bitcoin could step in and subsidize that process if somebody wanted to go down that route. and help establish those grid lines when there aren't currently buyers yet, when the grid is not yet established. So interesting dynamic there. And the big worry was, oh, we're going to have a bunch of Bitcoin miners eating up all the power, and it's going to cause higher prices, and it's going to put stress on the grid. Well, what we've seen here is we've seen an agreement between the local government and these miners that they would, in good faith, reduce if there's ever issues like this. So they have a buyer of last resort, but they have that buyer of last resort willing to curtail what they're using to help the grid when it's needed. The thing that I would love to see is that some of these individuals or some of these entities, power producers, actually mining themselves, or, you know, bringing in a firm to manage it for them, but mining themselves. And so then they don't care whether it's going to the grid or to the miners, and they can just kind of hit that equilibrium of, okay, there's not a lot of power usage, but we're still getting income from this. And oh, the demand is high, we'll just shut down the miners and the revenue will be made from this side instead. And I think that will be a very interesting way for cities to manage, and small towns and whatever, to manage power consumption in the future. And last little news story here, Diem, the Facebook stablecoin, or I'll say failed stablecoin. It doesn't seem like it's really happening anymore. Anyways, the co-creator of it, David Marcus, has come out. He's gradually kind of leaned this way, but he's a big fan of Bitcoin. And he basically praised Bitcoin about the uncensorable nature of it. And so he tweeted out, "It's become clear to me that Bitcoin will be the one asset and layer one still around in 20 plus years with increased compounding relevance over time." He said that it's truly leaderless and censorship resistant. And he said, in essence, it's unique and cannot ever be replicated. Damn. Pretty good. Now, he did talk. He said that the number two spot, if there's going to be a number two spot, is a big question. It's kind of up in the air. He's like, I don't know what's going to happen there. And he's basically come out and said he's a big fan of Bitcoin, and it's a digital gold and a great monetary network. So, seems like he's pretty orange pilled at this point. So that's really cool. I'm going to open this up now. So you guys, I asked you on Twitter earlier today, what is your favorite new piece of Bitcoin content this week? Article, podcast, video, book, whatever you like. I had a few good suggestions. A bunch of them were for that Fidelity paper, but I was already talking about that anyway. So I did see a few different things here. One of them, a few of the keynotes from, or the keynote from the Bitcoin for Corporations from Michael Saylor when he was talking to Jack Dorsey. Apparently that was quite a good one. I have to sit down and watch that myself. I also had a one from the guys at Paxful drop this one. The opening of a new educational center for Salvadorans in the Bitcoin community. That was on Bitcoin Magazine. There's another guy named Chris Smith. He wrote an article for Bitcoin Magazine, "How My Fraternity Supercharged Our Treasury by Adopting Bitcoin." That's awesome. I've already reached out to him. He's going to join Why Are We Bullish in March. Early March, he'll be on the show. So looking forward to chatting with him about that. And then I also saw a really good thread from Lily. Markets by Lily is her name. And she talked about ways to obtain Bitcoin privately, so that you don't have like a discernible link between you and your coins, so that you can prevent bad actors and individuals from constantly seeing every economic movement that you make, and potentially painting a target on your back of people trying to steal your sats. So she had a pretty solid, and this wasn't a new thread. This was actually from January 1st, but her Twitter handle is @marketsbylily, LILI. And yeah, she had this good tweet thread. I'm going to retweet it right now. So if you guys want to check it out, you can find it on my Twitter page. As far as things that I've thrown out this week, on Monday, I dropped a tutorial for TDEX, which is a decentralized exchange using the Liquid network. You can peg into Liquid. You can send and receive Liquid Bitcoin. You can move between Liquid and stablecoins and other Liquid denominated assets, like vouchers and stuff like that. I do a demo on how to utilize it and how to move back and forth. So if you're interested in that, you can check that out. I also dropped a couple lightning sessions, one on the top five ways to lose Bitcoin. So check that out, especially if you're new. That is, you want to learn the mistakes so that you can avoid them. I also dropped a lightning session on explaining CoinJoin, just a quick not even 2 minute explanation. What is CoinJoin and how does it help preserve privacy? And then finally, tomorrow we've got Why Are We Bullish coming up. We've got the return of Yellow, Sean Harris, Greg Zasch, and Plan Marcus. I did a panel with these guys when I was in Greece, but they're back for another one. And yeah, we're gonna have some fun tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Eastern time, live for Why Are We Bullish. So yeah, very excited about that, and it should be a good show. So set your reminders for tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern time. With that, I'm gonna wrap it up. Guys, I'm sorry that I didn't have visual accompaniment. I will work on that, fix that for next time. Leave it to what I would consider to be an important show for that to happen. But anyways, thank you guys very much for watching. Like, subscribe, share, all those things are super important. If you want to help the show in another way, you can hit up the sponsors I mentioned down below. ShakePay, Ledin, BitRefill, Keystone, Billfoddle, all that's in the show notes. And if you really liked what you saw, normally I would say leave me a tip at my Strike page, but I would defer to Honk Honk Hodl today. So if you really liked what you saw, head over to Twitter, follow at Honk Honk Hodl. Check out the pinned tweet, which will direct you to the Tallycoin page, and drop a few sats there, either on chain or via Lightning Network. And that will be funneled into a multi-sig. And Greg Foss, Jeff Booth, and our man on the ground in Ottawa will do their fiduciary duty to decide what is best and most helpful for those funds to go through. And just a quick note, as we're signing off here, we are currently looking at 72,001,099,614 sats sitting there. I would not be surprised if we got up to one Bitcoin in the next couple of days here, which is super impressive. So thank you guys for that. I'm going to sign off now. Have yourselves a wonderful day or evening, wherever you may be. See you guys next time for your daily session.
Huddle the Bitcoin.